Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey there, everyone. Just want to let you know the party will start in about 10 minutes. Just to let you know. Hello, Guy. Hello, Amy. Hey there, Tony. Welcome to the call. It'll be starting in about 9 minutes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello?
Hey there. Who's this guy? Try this
hello?
Again. I had yes, hello. How's it going?
Hey, this is good. Is this a tax podcast?
Pardon me?
This is a tax podcast number, correct?
Yeah, this is Michael Edward, and tonight Brother John is talking about oath of office of judges, and it applies to any and all legal litigation, civil or criminal, where
okay.
a judge whose oath of office is defective or doesn't exist, any of his rulings are void. I'm going to go back to muting everyone. We'll start in about 7 minutes, 6 minutes.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm sorry. I dialed early and I was waiting to get online.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And I just wanted to, I see that you dialed in about 17 minutes ago and didn't want you to think that you got the wrong number.
Yeah, I was thinking, well, are we going to Dallas or what? I'm just a little ahead of the schedule, I guess.
That's all.
Okay.
So
we'll be back
in about 6 minutes and we'll do the call then.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Richard?
On this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everybody in no uncertain terms that anybody looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at True Remedy is in the law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just folks saying what they might do or they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of the deal. Get some experience from folks that, what they've been through, storytelling, if you will. But that's about the extent of it. Again, if you require any kind of actual legal advice, you'd have to get an attorney. All right. If I can draw everybody's attention to the homepage of Your Remedy is in the Law, www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. We look up in the upper right-hand corner. We see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that. And you'll have a separate page come up. It's got two items on it, an otherwise blank page. Just two only items there. But these items are of much, much importance, especially if this is all new to you. On the left is the Jurisdictionary course, your 24-hour crash course on American jurisprudence, better known to some as AMJUR. What this is essentially is the foundation upon which all law in America rests. American jurisprudence is. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of it, to have diligently devoured this course multiple times, I would suggest. Once you've got that set up pretty tight now, that would mean that you would have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in really virtually any court scenario that you would find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process. Of course, some of you folks say the common law default process, that's for traffic tickets. Yes, that is what it's primarily known for. That's what most people require this course for. So it's a very, very high win rate, high win rate. But that's not why it's here. The reason that it's here is, again, especially if this is new to you, once you've gone through the jurisdictionary course and you start in on the common law default process, you'll see very quickly that it lines up, it mirrors almost perfectly. It acts as really as a real-life homework assignment. So you've gone through your jurisdictionary course, now you're doing the common law default, and those basic pillars, that core of how this all works, you're now exercising it out through the common law default process. And, then, of course, with the common law default process being primarily used for traffic court scenarios, and, of course, traffic court is such a common thing that we see in this country. We find it also helps folks that are new because traffic scenarios are thankfully usually, more times than not, they're usually, lesser severity situations. And so, if things don't go exactly according to plan, it's usually not the end of the world. So folks feel a little bit braver, I guess I should say, and they're more happy to use that to get their feet wet. And now with the very generous asking of just a contribution of $250 for the jurisdictionary course and $150 for the common law default process. We strongly encourage you to those up at your absolute earliest convenience. All right. On to the next subject. If we look on the home page of Your Remedy is in the Law, of course, every time we go to Your Remedy is in the Law, that little flag pops up, a little box pops up and asks if we want to continue on where we were requesting to go, or would we mind stopping, taking a moment and checking out Americans Restoring America. We've done this really because we're wanting to get folks to explore. Your Remedy is in the Law is, of course, under the blanket of Americans Restoring America. We have many different information providers providing many different educational processes. And then all of that just being Your Remedy is in the Law. And then there are multiple sites, I want to say about like a dozen, that are all under Americans Restoring America. So there's a tremendous amount there to digest, a lot of many wonderful different educational tools and processes. And so, again, at your earliest convenience, we strongly encourage you to check out Americans Restoring America. Just kind of poke around, see if you see anything that piques your interest. Most folks do. So, if you haven't already as well, go ahead and pick up a membership to Your Remedies in the Law. Also, a very, very affordable contribution of $10 a month. There are so many extra goodies that you get there with that $10 membership. Primarily, the archives. The archives. Now, some of you folks may be familiar with Freedom's Radio. If you're not, something else for you to check out there, freedomsradio.com. Every single call that we have is broadcasted out over Freedom's Radio. So by the way, if you find yourself in a situation where you don't want to dial into the call that night, maybe you're in a hurry, maybe you're traveling over, out of the road, just jump on Freedom's Radio and enjoy these calls. Now, of course, Freedom's Radio is no cost to you. So every single call, every night, you can enjoy those calls without any contributions. But that membership there that we were just speaking about, Your Remedies in the Law, contribution of $10 a month, one of the biggest things with that you're going to pick up is now the get to the archives. For all the previous calls. So all the different information providers that we've had, all the different topics over all the years, just an untold vast wealth of knowledge there, experience, lots and lots and lots of opinions to be heard, lots of two cents. You now have unlimited access to that with your $10 a month contribution for the Your Remedy membership. And so we encourage you to get on that too at your earliest convenience. All right, on to the next topic. Grass Fire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. Not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends, tell your family about it. What it is a private communications platform that enables you to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict pre-decided topics of discussion. By the way, that's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every page, every website that we have. How it works, essentially, is you've got a very user-friendly, very easy-to-navigate setup. You know, put your name in here, click next, put your address in here, click next. As you get to the end, it's going to ask you to pick from it's quite a healthy list of different topics. What are the ones that interest you? Pretty much no matter what the scenario is, we've got the topic, or we've got that topic there in the list. Whether it's veterans' rights, credit cards, home foreclosures, IRS matters, on and on and on, you can find it in that list. And so then when it's all done, wraps it all up and gives it back to you, much like a lot of folks would say is, a, you know, like it feels like a social media, but really nothing like a social media. It's very, very private, very, very secure. And so it's going to put you in contact with people right there in your local area that have the same interests that you do. And so if you're just hearing about this, you can imagine, you know, the impact that that could have. Not just with education, but, you know, with, you know, political matters as well. So there's no contribution required for that either. So we encourage you to sign up for that today. All right. Let's start winding down here. This next portion is called your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. When you come aboard with an information provider, you decide to do so, come aboard with an information provider here if your remedy is in the law, you're doing just that. Information providers pay your remedies in the law to advertise there on that site. That would be an expense to that information provider, along with any other expenses that that info provider has associated with your particular educational process. We always hope for the best. We plan for the best. But believe you me, we aim for the best. If you have any questions of that, I encourage you to check out yourremediesinthelaw.com/testimonials. And you'll see very quickly what we mean by that. But, you know, in life, sometimes things happen. And when they do, we have to roll with them and deal with them like we do with anything else in life. But that brings us to the topic of the refund policy at your remedy isn't law. There is none. Again, when you're coming aboard with an information provider, you're doing just that. You're going with that information provider. And so, for example, if there was to be any talk of a refund or a credit or anything like that, that would be a strict and private matter just between you and your information provider. But I can tell you, folks, that's few and far between. It has to be some pretty extenuating circumstances. Again, as always, you're expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to an information provider's time. All right. Well, one last thing here. These information providers, these speakers on our calls are our guests. And please, they should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that one of our speakers has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, or the process. But there's never a reason to not be friendly and courteous. Besides, if a question is posed properly, and then it's answered properly, then we all get to learn something from it. All right, well, that's
your ramble for this evening, Martin. We thank you so very, very much. All right, tonight we're going to have a very interesting conversation with Brother John. The conversation is regarding affidavits. Just a 30,000-foot view real quickly. A notarized affidavit is a written statement that is sworn under oath.
Hold on, ladies and gentlemen. We're having an issue here where I'm not given the option of killing
under oath that the information is
part
true and correct. Affidavits are commonly used in court cases as evidence to support one side or the other. So how does an affidavit or notarized affidavit work as evidence?
Stand by.
Well, since the person providing the affidavit is sworn that the information is truthful, the court can now consider the affidavit or notarized affidavit as factual evidence. The affidavit may contain witness testimony, expert opinion, or other information that helps prove a key point. However, affidavits.
All right. Took a little bit. Thank you so very much, ladies and gentlemen, for the allowing for that interruption. Before we get started tonight, I have some housekeeping to take care of. In fact, I have a lot of housekeeping to take care of. Just a few minutes to we have first-time callers. So I'd like to go ahead and associate a first name only with these phone numbers here. From Bradenton, Florida, We have someone with the last four numbers of 0636. 0636. May I have your first name only, please?
Teresa.
Hey there, Miss Teresa. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. How did you hear about us tonight?
Just another friend who's also, we have court cases that we're navigating. So.
Understood. All right, thank you so very, very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Uh-huh. And next is, I think it's Wadena, Saskatchewan, Canada, ending in 7838. Trying to unmute your phone here. There we go. Go ahead.
Hi there, Sheldon here.
Hey, Sheldon. Good seeing you.
Yeah.
We're hearing you.
Yeah, I've been talking to you guys for a while.
I know. It's down here in the South, we say that's been a coon's age, man. All right.
Exactly.
Next is Philadelphia, PA, ending in 8727. First name only, please. Wait for this phone to unmute you. My internet is going very slow at the moment. There we go. 8727, Philadelphia, PA. May I have your first name only, please?
Good evening. It's Valeria.
I'm sorry?
Valeria.
Valeria. Thank you, Miss Valeria. It's a pleasure.
Yes, good evening. Thank you.
Uh-huh. How'd you hear about us tonight?
A friend.
Oh, I'm glad everybody's got friends. That's good. Next is Denver, Colorado, ending in 31.04.
Like I said, call me if you need anything here. Okay, no, take your time.
Hello, Michael. It's Jim. Sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Jim.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
Is this Jim, hands-on Jim?
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. I recognize the voice.
There you go.
All right, you guys. I'll check that with you.
Okay. Stand by.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. Oh, come on. Be nice to me. See if we can't get this thing to behave. There we go. Boom. Boom. No, got to refresh. One more and we'll be done, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate your patience. Excellent. All right. And last is Elgin, Illinois, ending in 0494. Elgin, Illinois.
Hi, my name is Rose.
By any other name. Thank you, Rose.
Thank you.
Uh-huh, thank you. All right, we're going to officially start the call now. So this evening is going to be a very interesting call, ladies and gentlemen. You know, when we're dealing with students, each student has a unique situation about them where you have to get deeply involved with everything that's going on in order to mount a proper response to whatever the litigation is calling for. However, there is one commonality that cuts across the board, and that commonality is the oath of office of the presiding judge. The oath of office is something that is written into the state constitution or the federal constitution. It's very specific. Any deviation from the oath of office makes the oath that this jurist took void. So we're going to be talking about that tonight. We just had one more recently join us from Twin Cities, Minnesota. Or Minnesota, as some people call it. First name only, please. Ending in 3616. Twin Cities, are you there? Ending in 3616, phone number. First name only, please.
Diane.
Oh, thank you, Diane. Welcome to the call. So, without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn this call over to Brother John. John, unmute your phone.
Thank you, Martin, and thank you, Michael, for your kind and gracious introductions. I was looking for that one myself, Michael. Thank you for the encouragement there. I was talking, and there was just no response. the point that the topic that Michael presents and the points that it makes are actually much stronger than Michael makes it out to be. The very foundation of our government that we established requires that there are certain procedures that must be followed, and if they're not followed, that invalidates some or all of the activity. And to that end, the government that was established, sometimes don't realize quite all of the gravity of what it is. And in the Declaration of Independence, it says, "We, with a capital W, capital E, hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. And among these, indicating it's from a larger pool of rights, are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed." And that's deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Unlike most nations in that we cohabitate this third rock from the sun that we call planet Earth and home with, in this country, these United States of America, in which we cohabitate with our fellow individual, our fellow individual and us are the highest authority. And Abraham Lincoln, in his Gettysburg Address, in his 1861, November 19th address, finishes up that address with some earth-shaking, calm, phenomenal wording where he calls this, he says, "A government of the people, by the people, and for the people." And he was actually quoting the Declaration of Independence and going back to the aforementioned that we just read. And so when the people don't have time, aren't able to, aren't capable of, don't have the skill set, don't have the training, don't have the money, or just decide that they would rather not do something, they hire help. Air traffic controllers, U.S. forestry workers, Department of Transportation, highway people, workers, longshoremen, sanitation workers in the city, governors, presidents, judges, sheriffs. Oh, by the way, those last four, they're not just hired help. Those last four are temp help. And those inalienable rights that were reserved for the people were never, ever, ever surrendered or abdicated to the hired help. And so it's important that we remember that those that the government that we're that we're working with out there isn't a sovereign entity like many other countries claim, including like Great Britain. We the people, these people, they everyone, you know, especially those last four positions, what happens is that when they want a job, they get character references and different jobs. The employers ask for different amounts of character references. They sometimes, you know, they want 30,000 or 10,000 or 3,000 or whatever. But they ask for references and character references and signatures. And when you go around signing those petitions, and the, you know, to, so that this person can submit their employment application to the anywhere from the county clerk to the Secretary of State's office or whoever, they that there this is the same way, you know, like Hughes Aircraft or Country Store or Ace Hardware hires their employees. When they don't know you from Adam, they expect you to provide character references, and you do. Now, once you provide those character references, they go over them, and they prepare them, and then they usually have a hiring spree. Sometimes, you know, it's just they get their employers to all the employers together and go to a polling location and vote for whom they want to hire. But for the big ones, and for the big ones, they're included in the special and general elections every 4 years, or the midterms every two years. And because most of these people don't know anyone from Adam, they request and require that that there be some formalities and some guidelines in how they commit their work and how they do their job. And it says in Article 6 of the Constitution, not the Sixth Amendment, but Article 6, it says on paragraph 2, it says, the Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and then all the treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, and shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws in the state to the contrary notwithstanding. Whoa. That's very significant. It's very heavy. And furthermore, in paragraph 3 of Article 6, it says, the senators and representatives before mentioned, that's in Article 2, the members of the several state legislators and the executive judicial officers, both of the United States and the several states, shall be bound by an oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. And what that means is that they have an oath to support the guidelines that we, the people, laid out for them. I don't know how many of you, when it comes time to that time of year during preceding the midterm or the special or general elections, when you have your local precincts have their caucus and then they elect or designate members of that precinct to go to a state convention, like the Democratic State Convention or the Republican State Convention. But what happens is that at that convention, among all the other things that that goes on, they cover the platform, and which is the guideline for all the elected officials, that when they're elected, that what, regardless of the topic, it's in that platform, and that's how they're expected to legislate, and with judicial officers rule, et cetera, by that guideline. And you as an individual can go to the DSC, the Democratic State Convention, or the RSC, the Republican State Convention, and you can go submit corrections or revisions to that platform. And the and your legislators for the next 2 years, 4 years, or 6 years are bound by that. Our predecessors did the exact same thing with the Constitution. That is the guideline with which everything functions. Now, when you go to the DNC, Democratic National Convention, or the RNC, Republican National Convention, you can work on the party's platform there, and these are the ones that U.S. senators and U.S. representatives are required to abide by when they're legislating and voting. Therefore, you make the difference. Now, what happens is that going back to Article 6, Paragraph 3, says the senators and representatives before mentioned, the members of the several state legislatures, all executive and judicial officers, both the United States and the several states, shall be bound by an oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. So what happens is that that is part of the highest law of the land. Now, if that oath, if they don't take it, they can they actually participate in legislation or judicial activities? No. And both the U.S. Government and the state's legislatures, many of them have a very, very specific rules on what and how you can do in the when you are not or you do or do not have an oath of office intact. And the judiciary, there's it says judicial fraud, also known as fraud in the court, occurs when judicial system is tainted by fraudulent conduct. This can include where an attorney or other official commits fraud or misrepresentation, a judge commits fraud or misrepresentation, and or does not have a valid oath of office. See, and it says the court's orders and judgments can be voided if fraud in the court is discovered. And that's if the attorneys or the judge, the justice, finds it. A week ago yesterday, we, in response to a letter asking a question, Your Honor, it has come to our attention. There's been an allegation that you do not have a current oath of office intact. And to that end, at this juncture, to prevent you from being charged with Class A misdemeanors under state statute or second-degree felonies under federal statute, could you please submit a copy of your oath of office to us so that we can put these concerns to rest so that you are not criminally prosecuted? Well, in response to that letter, last Monday, the judge recused himself from the case, and I found out earlier today that the judge has sold his property and moved. I'm not certain what happened, but it became clear that this judge, who was not appointed, he was elected official, may have colored outside the lines quite a bit, and it was determined, and the person that called me said that she talked to the judge's secretary, and that she says, well, you know, in this case, in this case, in this case, going this many years back, that it appears that even after he was reelected four times, he violated his oath of office almost every single time, and that she said that he resigned, retired, took an early out, took what she used the term, just took a Plan B retirement, meaning some kind of lump sum, and he hasn't been paid yet. But the address, she says, and this lady said she asked him for the address where they were mailing it to, and she says, I don't know what to think of this. It's not a U.S. address. It's an island in the Caribbean. And after a careful examination, turns out it's a non-extradition island in the Caribbean. And the clerk made it very clear that she was, to this lady, upset with this judge's way he handled things, and that the only reason that she still worked there was she was a single mom putting three children through school, and that if she could have quit years ago, she would have, and that she had she has her own law degree and everything, but she was trapped, and was happy to share that she thought this judge, that she overheard the judge talking with some folks and indicated that I don't want to be here. If they start digging up my past, I will never see daylight again. I'm leaving. Okay. What we're finding out is that a lot of the justices, I've written a couple of letters, kind of boilerplated it, but most everyone, I try to talk them through asking this question, just writing a letter. In fact, we have one of our students that's on to this call right now, lives in the Northeast. She submitted letters asking a particular judge, a couple of them. One of them in her case, in a case that she has personally, and another one in you've probably heard of this Judge Merchant, that Juan Merchant, that's currently pursuing number 45 / number 47 and intends to besmirch his name. And there are some rumors, allegations that he didn't have the authority to take a civil or a misdemeanor, a state misdemeanor, and turn it into a federal felony, and is now attempting to sentence him under federal felony guidelines on Friday. Well, there's she wrote this wonderfully thoughtful, overly thoughtful citizen a letter saying, hey, could you please, it appears to be a question about your oath of office, you know, so that we don't have to worry about criminal prosecution. Could you please submit a copy of your oath of office immediately? And turns out there may be one or two other people, or even three, that have submitted a similar request or letter to this overly thoughtful citizen, Judge Merchant. And at this juncture, they're looking at what they might do. Now, me right now, I have to take the position that I serve the people and serve the public trust. Therefore, I cannot have a partisan view on the topic or even a bipartisan. My perspective at this time must be nonpartisan, strictly dealing with, and in this particular topic, judicial misconduct. And on the state of New York here, it makes it very clear that final judgments, a motion can be filed to vacate a final judgment based on fraud on the court. And one prosecutor that I spoke with yesterday, a New York State Deputy Attorney General, I had a question with another student, and she made a comment that if there's fraud on the court, and I didn't bring up that judge or that current case there, this was in a completely separate case. It was a homeschool family that they were charged with not, with failure to maintain schooling requirements, et cetera, and they seized the three daughters, and Child Protective Services still has them. And we were talking, and she said, I made a observation. I says, on this note that we're working on right here, the New York Secretary of State or Department of State, there's a difficulty with that it appears that, and for, she says, for the oath of office for judicial officers in New York State, they it says all public officers in New York must take the oath of office unless they're specifically exempted by statute. And she said to complete the oath of office, and there's a form that's provided by the New York Department of State, and they have to submit it, mail or hand deliver it to the New York Department of State State Records Office, and she gave me the address, and it's 1 Commerce Plaza, 99 Washington Avenue, 6th floor, Albany, New York, 12231. And she says, I am not, she says, I don't know what to think. First she said, I'm not. Then she said, I don't know what to think. And I says, that's pretty wide there. She says, can you hold? She had me on hold for 9 minutes. When she picked up the phone, she says, this particular judge does not appear to have an oath of office on file at 1 Commerce Plaza. And I says, what does that mean to you? She says, this means I may be having to give this individual a personal visit. And I says, a personal visit? You mean as in official, as in like the Deputy Attorney General's office visit from? And she says, yes. And she says, I want you to know that I can't side on one court, one side of the of your issue with the homeschool family and the 3 children. And she says, I can't choose sides on this. I'm required. This girl, she's not married. She's 41 years old, and she. Propriety is her big thing. And she says, I'm compelled to deal with this strictly at the law, but she says, you may have a chance. She says, I may ask them to overturn the judgment, and because this judge does not have the authority. And she says, I might have to sit down with him, because technically, if he doesn't have the authority to hear the cause, she said the issues with the oath of office are that if they don't take it, they are technically impersonating a judge. And she said, she made it very clear that impersonation in the second degree is a Class A misdemeanor that include and that. Leave somebody subject to jail time, and she quoted me the New York Penal Code 190.26, and that it's very, very serious, and includes heavy fines, jail time, vacations at Club Fed, stuff like that. She was getting more incensed by the minute as she apparently was pulling up this particular judiciary's, let's just say, his voting record, the way he was adjudicating cases and ruling on them, and that he had twice sent both the husband and the wife in the case to contempt of court charges, and both times they got 30 days each. They were not allowed to couples wing on the penitentiary up there. She said the one gentleman was twice sent to Rikers for 30 days. I guess Rikers is one of the larger penal institutions up there in New York. But it was very, very, very significant what she was sharing. I did not bring it up, but quite off the record, she brought up, she says, somebody needs to take Judge Merchan and clarify whether he has an oath of office. And I say, are you saying he doesn't have one? She says, I don't know. I didn't ask. And she says, I don't have time to dig into it right now. But she says, if you have any friends that are of that particular political persuasion that want to help 45, 47 out, they might want to just call up Judge Merchan and ask him if he's got a current oath of office. And one of our students today got a hold of me this afternoon and said that she had an email address, sent the email, sent a snail mail, certified return receipt requested, green card included. And she was inquiring of him what his situation was on this. It might be embarrassing that if you just ask the question, don't accuse him or her of anything. And when I talk about judiciary, I refer to the masculine as a gavel and the feminine as a gown, and the combined gowns and gavels. There is a case where a young man, the judge completely off her rocker, this young man in Arizona, firearms related charges, and usually, there's just one question you can ask when somebody has a gun related misdemeanor or felony charge, and the question is just very simple. Your Honor, where in the Constitution does it exclude my right to keep and bear a firearm in that school ground or that other place, let alone your courtroom? And I've been handing out these cards for years that have that on one side. And the other side, if it has 18 U.S.C. 242, which makes it a felony in the second degree if the judge doesn't immediately dismiss the case or if the prosecutor doesn't dismiss the case. And now that brings up a question that the case in Washington State that occurred a week ago yesterday, that one, he was worried about previous cases. Oh, gee, John, that's a very deep subject, because that implies that if they broke their oath of office two trials or 2 years before I came in to see this bench, and he hasn't been operating with an oath of office, and we can prove that he hasn't, then yes, you're exactly correct. And we had a justice in Florida four and a half, almost 5 years ago. When we asked the question the right way and she realized the problem, she recused herself from the case, and within 45 days had moved out, sold out, and moved to a non-extradition country. I had a gown here in the Houston area a few years back, and I was very hurt by this one. I worked on her election campaign 3 times, and she said, John, you came into my court in that, she used the term, damn wheelchair of yours, and she said, and you had to let your student bring up that question in front of me. And she says, and I says, you know what, I said, what's the matter? She says, you don't understand. She says, I have ruled against that Second Amendment thing so many times that, she says, I have to, she says, you're the first person I'm telling, and you're probably the only person that's going to find out before I leave. She says, I appreciate you working on my election campaign 3 terms in a row. And she says, but she says, those people, I want you to know that I've overturned 8 of my own decisions for the last 24 months. And I'm making petition to have 5 of them who are currently serving sentences released. And she says, I realize that I can't do enough damage control. I'll lose everything. They'll sue me. They'll take away everything, and then they'll put me in jail. And she says, thanks for nothing and thanks for everything. She says, you got me in, you helped get me into office. And she says, doggone it. I told her, I wish I wasn't the person that was, had something to do with this, And she says, I love and appreciate you and your family and your children and everything else. And she says, yeah, and my husband appreciates you fixing our, a backup power system in our generator. He says, but he says, we've got to go, you know, and she didn't tell me where she was going. Within a month, there was new people living in her house. The children won't tell me what happened to her, where she went, she or her husband. Her husband left his job, but she was so afraid of potential blowback prosecution that she just packed up and left. And she explained it to me very nicely to my face, you know, and she was very, very upset. And so what's happening is that right now we're looking at the possibility of a student in Arizona checking into the oath of office that this gown did that laid a heavy conviction on him, all for she was violating the Second Amendment rights, his rights, and they say, and they're doing it under color of law. There are things that are so corrupt there in Arizona that it's hard to work around some of these prosecutors. I've even had judiciary in California and Massachusetts, which are two of the most corrupt judiciary states. Arizona may be beating them out, but questions that I've had judiciary go to a thought-provoking moment when they realized what the law really was, that they even, some of them, overturned their own decisions. This stuff is not working very well in Arizona at the moment. And New York, we're going to see how a couple things work in the next week or two. We have a difficulty in Louisiana right now, and we're trying to see if we can ask the right questions to cause this senior gavel of the bench for many, many years. And the problem with that is that he believes his own press, you know, and then man made God in his own image. And it's becoming harder and harder to work with some of these. And we're finding out that huge, great, heavy battles can be won by a little bit of letter writing. And for all of you on this call this evening, it would be my honor and privilege to do whatever I could to assist you if you know of a specific judiciary that may have some challenges or you know somebody that was convicted of a crime where, you know, and I have, you know, both the state and the federal issues, getting the judgment set aside is on a single motion, okay? And right now, we're going to try to see if we can get a judgment set aside in New York and then one in Arizona. I've got a friend who, his student, is up in Wisconsin. We're going to see if we can get her judgment set aside. And we're realizing that the power of the oath of office and the requirements of that is so substantial. And different states have different rules, but, and I won't use the B word, the but word, I'll use the A word, the and word, and most of them mirror the federal statutes and the federal constitution. The first time I heard this, I was certain it was a joke. I was absolutely certain it was a joke. The second time I heard it was because the person that told it to me the first time was a little bit bruised when I laughed at it and thought how cute it was. He told me, and the person that actually saw this happen shared it with me. This gentleman, a factory owner, went down on the factory floor, and behind one of the machines, there were five employees that were drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes. And he asked him, "It's not break time. What are you guys doing? You're supposed to be working. Why aren't you working?" And one of them, without missing a beat, looked up and says, "We didn't know you were watching. Oops. Your employees, the judge, the sheriff, the governor, the president, the senators and representatives, both state and U.S., from your congressional districts, your senatorial districts, they all work for you. When they are coloring outside the lines, they're spending too much time at the water cooler on break, or they're conspiring to make law that deprives you of your rights. And presently, we're looking at some legislators from out west that came up with some scathing, scoring gun legislation for the state of California. That that one of the ancillary things that they left in there was that they're saying that this person, because they're a convicted felon, they can't own a firearm. Okay, where in the Constitution does it say those inalienable rights become alienated when a person commits a crime, whether they paid their debt to society or not? Did I miss something? Was I not very bright? It doesn't. If it does somewhere, please, one of you correct me. You know, send a message to Michael. Tell me where in the Constitution I missed that. And there was a case here in Texas recently where a group of children, the parents were charged with multiple felonies. Two of the children were driving out in the farm in a pickup truck that only lives on the farm, but it had a 22 and a 12-gauge, 22 caliber rifle and a 12-gauge in the gun rack in the back of the window. The sheriff deputy drove through the fence, knocked down the barbed wire, some of the cattle actually got out, and arrested the 11-year-old and the 9-year-old, went to the farmhouse, called CPS, had all the other children taken, and ended up in court. And CPS attorneys were just going ballistic. The district attorney, the ADA, there were two of them in there. They were going ballistic. And I was sitting there in my wheelchair, and with my hand raised, and they were going over all the charges, and the judge looked at me and he says, "Sir, you've had your hand up for a while. Is there a reason you're on the inside of my bar?" I says, "Well, that's a good question. Did the honorable court want an answer?" He says, "Of course I did." And I says, "Well, I'm here amicus curiae." He says, "I saw you talking with both the sets of parents. How could you be friend of the court when it appears you're here for the families?" I says, "Well, Your Honor, is it if there was a risk of your 21 years, 9 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days of tenure being taken away from you, and you possibly being jailed?" He says, "How do you know?" You know, and I had one of my investigators do a full bio on the judge before we got there. He says, "How do you know all that?" I says, "Know what?" And I says, "But if there was a concern, would it please the court to hear that?" He says, "Well, of course." And I start. He says, "Where are you going to start?" I says, "Well, we're charging these individuals with wrongful carry of a firearm, you know." And he says, "Well, in this state, you know," I actually gave the bailiff a stack of these cards. Back then, they were still paper. I only do plastic coated cards now, but I gave him a stack of them to take over the prosecutor and take to the judge. And it just says, where in the Constitution is it excused my right to keep and bear a firearm in that school ground or this other place, let alone your courtroom? And he said, he turned it over, and there was 18 U.S.C. 242 on the back. And I says, yes, Your Honor, deprivation of rights. And he says, and then CPS, yeah, object. And he says, what are we objecting about? He says, we had a 9-year-old and 11-year-old in possession of firearms that could have been loaded. And I says, could have been loaded? I says, and he says, well, sir, what do you got? The judge just looked at me. He says, what do you have to say about that, sir? I says, where in the Constitution does it say those inalienable rights are alienated if they haven't reached some certain age? And both CPS attorneys went ballistic. They were, object, Your Honor, this guy, he's in contempt of court. And the judge leaned back in his easy chair and let him go for 3/4 of a minute. It was, it seemed like an eternity, but it was close to a minute. And he leans forward and he says, I'm going to summarily dismiss this, or does the state have a motion to dismiss? You know, and they argued, and we finished up. Famous friends. We were talking. Nobody went to jail that day. But by asking the right question, thought-provoking questions, you can make a difference, cause them to think on what the law really is. There's an old saying, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. With that, my time has now come to a close. I want to thank you, Martin, Michael, and all of you, for your patience and your graciousness and having me here. Thank you. Back to you, Michael.
You're most welcome, Brother John. You're most welcome. Before we get into the Q&A portion, well, let me just give instructions first so that you can be prepared for it. For those of you joining us by telephone on the conference call, press *2. The star is just beneath the number 7. Some people press the pound. Just do it. But it's *2 on your keypad. When you press *2, that will cause your name to jump from this list that I'm looking at up to the very, very top. And I'll see you there, and then I'll go ahead and unmute your phone, and you're free to ask any question or make any comments to Brother John you'd like to. For those of you listening on Freedom's Radio, you'll see in the center right of your monitor a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left-click inside of it, and then type away your comment or question. Outside that box underneath, to the right side, there's a place to put your name and some other information if you'd be so kind, and I will be glad to, and then hit the submit button. And when you hit submit, it pops up on my end, and I'll be glad to lend my voice to speak your comment or your question. Let's see what else we have. So let's do one more bit of housekeeping, if I may, please. We have two things. One is I'm going to give the disclaimer, the very, very abbreviated disclaimer, once more at this time. And the reason for it is probably 75% of the callers that have come in on this call tonight came in after the disclaimer was given. So let's just very simply, nothing that you hear in this call in any way, shape, or form may be deemed by you to be legal advice or financial advice. If you're here attending this call seeking legal advice or financial advice, I very politely, I very respectfully, and I very firmly ask that you hang up on the call right now, if you would. And the reason for that is because no one here is a member of the bar, and as such, not being a member of the bar is not allowed to give legal advice. If you're seeking legal advice, simply contact an attorney or a lawyer in your state, and they'll give you legal advice. So the other part of this housekeeping is to we have a first-time caller from Sterling, Illinois, with a phone number ending in 2485. Sterling, Illinois, phone number ending in 2485. Matt, you're just your first name only, please. Yep, just your first name. Hello. I guess
there's a lot of background noise coming from somewhere, Michael.
That's all right. I'll cancel that out. All right. So we'll start with Bill in Memphis, Tennessee at the moment, I guess. Go ahead, Bill.
Good evening, Bill.
The mute button hasn't worked yet. Hold on. Unmute, rather.
Okay. Hold on.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
There we go. Yeah, I can hear you now, Bill. Go ahead.
Okay. If a judge, John, I appreciate you coming on. If a judge has resigned, how would you get a copy of his oath of office when he was in office?
Bill, that's a very good question. To just quickly cover one example, New York, at the New York Department of State State Records Office at One Commerce Plaza, they have all of them that have ever been filed. And New
is that
York
state
requires
or is that state and federal. Is that
New York? New York requires that the state be filed with them. Okay. Now the federal, there's a whole host of places that you can find the federal ones. There, and it depends on the jurisdiction. We had a Pensacola justice a while back. Turns out the clerk at the U.S. District Court office in Pensacola for the U.S. court, not the state, was kept the oaths of offices right there. And it varies from place to place.
Is that do you think that that's a federal protocol for the clerk to keep them?
There's many of them are doing exactly what the Chief Justice in that jurisdiction orders them to do. There isn't a central clearinghouse for the federal judges that I know of. There may be. I haven't learned of it yet.
Okay. I wonder if the clerk doesn't have it. Maybe the clerk could advise how to find it.
Well, there's the local clerk of the court knows where they're at. Just call the clerk's office up. Okay. And if you have some extra time on your hands this week, in the next day or two, look up how to contact Judge Merchant. He's all on, he's on all the web all over there, and just see about sending him an email or a snail mail and just ask him about where's your oath of office.
Okay. Okay, I'll do that.
Okay. In fact, I encourage everyone on the call, if you have some time this week, send Judge Merchant an email or a snail mail and just ask him how he's doing. Just say, hey, somebody, this allegation came up. Is it true or not? And do we need to refer this to a state or a federal prosecutor? You know, just ask questions. And I've given you a couple of different examples of how you can pose those questions. But just I encourage everybody on this one. And in the next week or two, maybe in two or three weeks, we'll revisit judicial oath of office and oath of office in general. And you guys can share what you found out. In the meantime, I promise you, a justice who does not have his oath of office intact, who's been leaning on somebody of this gravity, and all of a sudden realizes the gravity of what is about to come back on them, they may take some immediate action. And I've been shocked at some of the action that they have taken.
Okay. Very well. Well, I'll look into that.
Thanks for being on the call tonight, Bill.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Take care. Back to you, Michael.
All right. Thank you so very, very much. Next is Guy from Iowa.
Hello. How are you?
Very well.
Good evening, Guy. How are you?
Can you hear me well enough, please? First?
Yes. Yes, I can,
great.
Guy.
I read a booklet today called Meet Your Straw Man and Whatever You Want to Know. It was very informative and very disturbing at the same time. At the end of the book, it stated some facts that we as the people may not know. One of the bullets, number 7, says that no judicial courts nor judges have existed in America since 1789. Executive administrators, not judges, enforce statutes and codes. This bothered me, and I read further. It says that we, the people, do not include you and me, since our names are all in capital letters and fictional legal names. How are we to use this if we're in a court? Does this mean that all the courts in America are a kangaroo court?
That's a good question. And someone asked a question a while back about, you know, including she asked one about the gold fringe, you know, indicating a maritime or court. There's been a handful of people that I have to admire, these individuals that study to show themselves approved, and they one gentleman, he was 6 times in less than 1 hour, he says, Your Honor, I may have to object with that. It sounds, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like that's something that would be in an admiralty or a maritime court only, not a common court. And he says, I need to know, is this a admiralty or maritime, or is this a common law court that we're on, as constitutional common law court? And
correct.
I was shocked by the way this gentleman, he was just very kind about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he asked all the right questions, and you could smell the smoke. He was absolutely, the judge made certain that he didn't do anything that borderlined a maritime or admiralty law kind of action.
Right.
And it's not published anywhere that I can find about admiralty and maritime, you know, in fact, now there's even things on the internet about the gold fringe saying, oh, it's just decorative, et cetera, this and that. Horse feathers. When I, back in the 60s, this young man came before a judge. The young man happened to be the judge's newspaper boy also. But this young man came before a judge, and that young man asked the question, Your Honor, what does the gold fringe mean? And he says, that means specifically, and he says, this means that this is a maritime or admiralty capable court. You know, and I didn't catch the word, you know, that he made the discretion capable at the time. But he caught me a couple of days later, delivering his newspaper. And he sat and explained to me, he says, there's a different kind of law, admiralty and maritime, that, you know, he says, and he says it goes back to Great Britain. And he began to expound on this. And I used to get up at a 3:45 to throw my 178 newspapers in the morning. And this is now getting closer to 5:30, you know, and the light sun's starting to come up. And he says, you probably ought to get around to your newspapers, but we need to finish this. And over the next 2 or 3 years, he began to give me a little bit more and a little bit more education. Since I've seen these individuals that, because it does not appear to be published anywhere, and especially now that the internet is there, You know, you can change the course of history with a stroke of a single key, you know. I mean, you can delete all of history because the books, the hard copy books aren't even there anymore. But this judge explained things to me back then in the 60s that still curls my toenails.
Right. But so we cannot use the Constitution to defend ourselves in court, per se? We have to use
No. Your Honor, you're saying, Your Honor, I may have to object here. Are you saying I can't use the Constitution to defend myself? That sounds like only an admiralty or a maritime law court. You know, or is this a common law court, like constitutional common law court, or is this an admiralty maritime? You have to ask that right there, literally. You know, don't let them carry it over like that, guy. Just ask the question right there.
Okay, I see. Is it admiralty or common law court? I'm probably already getting that wrong already.
No, you're doing good. You're doing very well.
Thank you. I'm just trying to.
None of us get it all the way right every single time, brother.
Yeah, John, may I chime in on this, please?
Yes,
yes, Michael, go ahead.
All right, so let me just disclaim to everyone on the call, I am not an information provider. I've had the pleasure of auditing the phone calls, the conference calls that I put together, not only for groups like this, but for individual students throughout these years, the near 30 years. And I've just, you know, what do they say? Even a blind squirrel will find a nut now and then. I happen to just pick up some things. So what I want to address the thing about a straw man.
Yes.
A straw man is someone, it's an illegal activity, number one. It's an illegal activity to engage with a straw man. A straw man is someone that you hire, you pay to go in to a litigation scenario and present testimony. Now, the testimony, in all likelihood, is not truthful. And for the fee that they're paid, they're willing to lie. That's why it's all illegal. Otherwise, they would have been subpoenaed to come in to tell the truth. So a straw man is an illegal thing, and you don't want to ever do that. I want to read you a short quote from a justice sitting on the Supreme Court of the United States. It was 1901. He said, quote, "The idea prevails with some. Indeed, it has found expression in arguments at the bar that we have in this country substantially two national governments, two, one to be maintained under the Constitution with all of the restrictions, the other to be maintained by the Congress outside and independently of that instrument by exercising such powers as other nations of the earth are accustomed to." He's very clearly stating that we have two classes of people that are citizens, two different classes of citizens, and we have two different lands that are owned by under different two different jurisdictions. Now, I'm going to quote you very quickly a few other cases that segue into this declaration of this Justice John Marshall Harlan in 1901. It's the Bidwell decision, by the way. First is U.S. versus Valentine, 288 F. Supp. 957. Quote, "The only," that's singular, "absolute and unqualified right of a United States citizen is to residence within the territorial boundaries of the United States." Similarly, Maxwell versus Dow, 20 SCR 448 at page 455, quote, "The privileges and the immunities of citizens of the United States do not necessarily include all the rights protected by the first eight amendments to the federal Constitution against the powers of the federal government.
Really? Hendricks.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. This, and in fact, I'm going to give you something else before you go with this. Hendricks versus Maryland, SC Reporters, 610 through 625. This is 1914. Quote, a U.S. citizen upon leaving the District of Columbia, we're going to go back to that in a second, becomes involved in interstate commerce as a resident and does not have the common law right of a citizen of one of the several states, end quote. Actually, it says common law right to travel. However, that would be across the board, the common law for anything. It's common law rights. So what we're reading here. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Guy, are you beginning to see a pattern? Your right, that observation that you read was very correct in many ways, except that when you point out to the justices that, you know, you perceive that type of activity, they don't want to admit that. And to that end, they will treat you as a common law individual, a resident of one of the aggregate states, and okay. they will give you common law rights. And most of the time, there's a couple, one of them, the judge got up, he says, GD, and he's standing up and leaning over the bench. You arrogant little, he called me a pissant son of a bitch.
Right.
He says, this is an admiralty court, and you will get, I says, excuse me, Your Honor, with all due respect, where there's a will, there's a way, and I will be leaving that way because I can only be heard if this is a common law court. He says, you get back, you know, and I was very, very lucky. I had just gotten out of the service only 2 years earlier. This is in 1978, and I was lucky that I had two friends with me that were both federal marshals, and that was the only thing that saved my bacon.
Right. So it's imperative that we ask the judge to declare which type of court they're adjourning on, is a ruling on, if it's a common
law?
Law or a admiralty law.
Admiralty
as in, law.
Yeah, as in the highest rank in the Navy, admiral, admiralty. Mm-hmm. Okay, and or yeah, maritime, which is also high seas, or admiralty. Some people say, John, I can't find out whether this court is an admiralty or a common law, and they're right. And I haven't been able to find many of those ones that they looked up. And it's only in once you get inside the court, you know, you just Your Honor, I may have to object to that again. That seems like we're looking at admiralty or maritime law. And am I completely studied in admiralty and maritime? No. Am I completely studied in common law? No. I study every single day that I can. If I have breath of life and a few extra moments in my day planner, I am studying law. I'm just a youngster. I haven't hit the 7-0 yet, you know. It'll be a next year before my wife and I start to do the 7-0 thing. But
well, congratulations.
I'm just a young sprout. And at the same time, I don't know if there is truly anybody that really knows all of the that they're aware of all the admiralty and common law differences. And I've seen some people that are aware of some of them, and they managed to somehow win back. I don't think the judges even all know. And I've talked to many of the judges that are elected officials just here in my jurisdiction. Many of them, some of them didn't even know the difference between maritime/admiralty and common law. And one of them She was working on her sixth reelection campaign.
Oh, my God. So, so how fair is it to have the judges that they're just going back and forth between common law and admiralty law?
Some of them don't know the difference. And the way things they were taught from law school is straight out of admiralty.
I see.
They don't know the difference between common law and admiralty.
Now, for our common man purposes, when we are in the judicial system and we have an issue that we need to have a judge rule on, now we obviously know anything that happens between man to man, man to criminal, criminality, we can understand. Is that going to be admiralty law or is that going to be common law? Laws that we reside with. Could you tell me the difference between that? Is it possible, please, at all?
Okay. Ask your question a different way.
Okay. All right. How would you define admiralty law as opposed to common law rules in a judiciary setting, please?
Admiralty and maritime law, there are specific books that you can obtain even on the internet. Most of them, have you ever heard the term JAG, J-A-G?
Yes, I thought that was referred to, I'm so sorry, excuse my ignorance, but I thought that referred to pilots in the Navy and or the Air Force.
Judge, Advocate, General.
Oh, okay. That's awesome.
I've heard that there's TV shows that they have. Some that are even entitled JAG.
Mm-hmm.
Now, me, I haven't had a TV antenna hooked up since November of 1977. So you ask me what's on TV, I scratch my head and look kind of dumb, you know. I feel kind of dumb because I don't know what's on the TV, you know, and
right.
I don't know what the movies are out there anymore. But there are naval and maritime legal resources that you can find on the internet where you can get a copy of. You can start subscribing to the Maritime Law Journal, etc. All of that, and it is not easy.
Okay. It's not easy to define.
No, it's not. That's correct.
I thought that every... No, I know I have not had a chance yet to... what's the word I'm looking for real quick? To... reconfigure my citizenship status. I can say that loosely. However, I thought every natural-born citizen American in America has the inalienable right for life, liberty, and justice. How is
yes?
Okay.
And all
let
of
me
these
let me come in on something here, if I may, again.
Please.
John, you mind?
I would like to make one little point real quick before you jump in.
Yeah.
If you do a web search on maritime law books, there's the Admiralty and Maritime Law by, I think it's Robert Prince or Robert Force. I forget which one of them wrote it, but it's on there. And, the latest edition, I think is, 2000 or 2010. But you can get that, and that's a place where you can start.
Okay. What was the name again, please, sir?
Okay. Do a web search, maritime law books.
Maritime law books, okay.
Yeah. And it's a PDF, and it's a couple of hundred pages.
Okay.
What will happen is that will give you a place to start. To be able to look up admiralty and maritime law.
Okay. All right. That's actually a really good quest. You know, it's a real good endeavor to undertake, I think.
Okay. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, thank you. I spoke with a gentleman earlier today. His name is Andre, and he's on the call tonight. Andre, if you would like to come into this conversation tonight, just press star 2 on your keypad, and you're most welcome to. John, I had a good conversation with Andre today. He is on par with what you're doing, and so we'll talk about that a little bit later. But, Andre, I just wanted to extend the invitation. If you'd like to kibitz here, please do so. Now, what I wanted to bring up, and then I'll check the board to see if he pressed star 2, is this. The Legislative Act of February 21st, 1871, it was the 41st Congress at Section 3, Chapter 62, page 419. It states that Congress chartered a federal company entitled, quote, United States, end quote. Congress chartered a federal company. And this, by the way, was without constitutional provision to do so, but they did it anyways. It was also known as U.S. Inc. It was also known as Commercial Agency and originally designated as, quote, Washington, D.C., end quote, in accordance with the 14th Amendment, which the record indicates was never ratified. The 14th Amendment was never ratified. Now, that's just not me saying that. You go to Utah Supreme Court, the case known as Diet versus Turner. It's 1968. Said that the 14th Amendment was never ratified.
Ratified.
Yeah. State versus Phillips, 1975, says the same thing. Coleman versus Miller, Tulane Law Review, South Carolina Law Quarterly, the Congressional Record of June 13, 1967, pages 15,641 through 15,646. They say this, quote, a citizen of the United States is a civilly dead entity operating as a co-trustee and a co-beneficiary of the PCT. The PCT is the Private Constructive SESTK Trust. It's a private constructive trust known as the SESTK Trust of the United States, Inc., under the 14th Amendment, which, by the way, upholds the debt of the United States of America and the United States in Section 4. So, we've been operating on, we've been playing football while they've been playing baseball, is basically the easiest way to put it.
Exactly.
All right. So, I'm very pleased that Andre pressed star 2 on his keypad. So, let me introduce Andre. This is John.
An honor and privilege to meet you, Andre.
Likewise. Can you hear me?
Yep, perfectly.
Yes, sir.
It definitely is an honor and a privilege. It's good to hear this kind of conversation. I did want to add a little bit of information to it, if I can. If somebody is looking to get that oath of office of Judge Merkin, I do have the forms. New York does have a form that allows you to foil any of those documents. They'll get back to you rather quickly, and you can do up to 6 judges at a time. This is foil at newyorkcourts.gov, and they'll get all of the judges' information for you. That's what we use. So I'm happy to share that with you if you'd like that. The other thing, you spoke a little earlier, and there's so much that I gleaned from this conversation. It was just a fun listen. But you had spoken about someone that was already charged and found guilty of a felony, not being able to carry their arms with them. there is a very good maxim of law and then maxims of equity that we abide by as well, and that is that you can't have a continuous crime. You can't label them and deem them a debtor still after they've paid the debt. And so that's what they do. And so they have this wonderful act out there called the Americans with Disabilities Act that I love to leverage a lot, just to kind of bring that into scope for them. And that kind of sets them on their heels anytime you use the ADA. Wonderful book out there, too, called Seeking Justice Through the Americans with Disabilities Act. So the other thing is the oath of office. I like that you're asking questions and not making statements. I think that's where a lot of people get into trouble because they go in and make statements. I've kind of coined this phrase, if you're asking, you are as king. Kings ask questions of their subjects who must answer. And you're the king in this case, or you should be. These are people that are supposedly working for you. So you are as king, and you're questioning your servant. And so never go into a courtroom and make a bunch of statements. It never works out for you. Those are just a few of the tidbits, but I do like this course of action that you're taking. I do have some questions, though. Are you leveraging any other tools to really kind of bring the courts to a halt? And when I'm asking it, I'm using their own systems. So the IRS is one of my best friends, the Department of Treasury, because I have them do all of my investigations for me. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the case out of Dallas, Texas. I'm sorry, not Dallas, Texas, Dallas, North Carolina, and I'll pull it. I can give you the judge's name, but it was a case where a gentleman was suing the state police and the local police for actions they took against him, and he was suing them under Chapter 150B, which is what defines the executive or law enforcement, which falls under the executive. And the determination was that he couldn't sue them under Chapter 150B because they don't fall under the executive. And why? It's because they are private for-profit organizations. Not only was it the police, but it was also the licensing department or the licensing corporation, which issued licenses. He couldn't sue them either. They didn't fall under Chapter 150B. So they are what we call, pirateers on the land. And we deem them as such, and I use that in a lot of the cases where people have tickets or something like that. And it's a fun one to use because when they hear that, most of the police think that they are law enforcement. Most sheriffs think that police are law enforcement, which is very odd. Sheriffs have an oath of office. Police don't. Sheriffs are elected. Police aren't. And then as you were just speaking about administrators, that's exactly what they are. They're administrators. They're not judges. They're administrative. And these are administrative courts. That's why everything is administrative. That's why you can do an administrative process and get remedy. So we use Title V a lot. And so I don't know if all of these are tools that you guys use, using any of the IRS forms to get remedy, to show that they're not courts. They can't be courts. They're not allowed to be courts. They're corporations. They're not political subdivisions. They're not tax exempt, which you have to be in order to be a court. And it brings things to a grinding halt almost every time. I should say in my case, it has been every time. So are these things that you guys use, as kind of follow up to your oath of office?
There's a handful of things that we use. You know what? this in itself is a very long discussion.
Yes, it is.
The short answer is yes. Some of those okay. are. The long answer is there's some things that you bought up that we don't use. Not yet.
Okay. Well, I like I said, I love what I'm hearing. I like what you guys are doing. So I greatly appreciate the opportunity to listen and hear. A lot of these things they should be 101 for people. The oath of office should be the first thing that you're looking for. If somebody's going to be in an elected role or elected capacity, all of them have to take that oath of office. And you said something else, that the majority of them mimic the Constitution, the federal Constitution. Actually, all 50 states have to cede authority. So everything's been compacted into that federal constitution. So even though some of them may try to deviate a bit, the rules of the game are they all had to cede their authority to Washington, D.C. And that's what they did. So all of those constitutions, what we then call a concurrent jurisdiction, it's all concurrent. So we can move from one jurisdiction to the next fairly seamlessly because they're all concurrent, they're all compacted into the federal constitution as well. So very interesting conversation. I'm looking forward to hearing more and being on some more of these calls. With that, I yield, but thank you so much for inviting me, Michael. This was
a treat. Really. I'd love to set up a private conference call with you and John. And for the rest of you that are hearing this, please don't misunderstand the context with which it's given. What everyone sees on the face of what we do here at AmericansRestoringAmerica.com, your remedy is in the law.com, you see it in a very personal manner because you have your ox gored and you've reached out for somebody to help you, which is what we do when you engage with us and we develop a student-teacher relationship from the beginning until the very end. And the very end may be 3-4 years down the road, sometimes even longer. So that's what you know of us. What you don't know is that there is an entire operation, very broad across our country, with people involved that are seeking at actually the very highest levels to revitalize this republic that we have, to educate the people. We don't have a democracy. The democracy is repugnant to our Constitution, our circa 1789. It's repugnant to it. And there is a massive amount. In other words, what you're seeing tonight and on these calls individually is maybe a nickel's worth of a $10 bill that is actually going on. And I'd like to invite Andre to have a conversation with John, because our model that we've developed and are continuing on an ongoing basis daily to develop is to embrace other groups that are doing what we're doing, not without coming underneath our umbrella. They don't have to. They're welcome to. But to work together, to synergize the value of our energies and our life's blood, to bring back this republic. We see the poster child we called President Trump, and he's very vocal, and he is speaking all the words we want to hear. And it appears like he's setting everything up to execute in law what we're doing here as well. However, until the reins of self-government can be handed back into the hands of we the people, even though we may have a temporary pass for the next 4 years, if you would, and possibly longer, we still don't have the reins of self-government back into our hands. And there's two things I want to share with you. Grassfirecommunications.com. www.grassfirecommunications.com. We have not gone national with it. We haven't really grown at all. We just released it about 4 months ago. However, go to grassfirecommunications.com, read the homepage, and understand how we there have the tool at the county level, at the city level, at the voting precinct level to take back the reins ourselves. We're not asking anybody for them. We're taking them. And this is a tool that we can do this with. I've even gone so far as to move our servers out of this country into Iceland, where they don't like governments. So that's one thing. The other thing, every one of you on the call, please write this down. www.AmericanByBirth.com, AmericanByBirth.com. There's two PDFs there. One is, the first one is, once we were colonists, subject to a king, a primer on jurisdiction. Now, this is a collection of court cases that I've assembled I've put on into about 21 pages, and I created a storyline that walks you through these court cases to connect all the dots. So even a third grader reading this can easily comprehend what we're doing here and the horrible assault against our republic that began in the beginning at the Articles of Confederation. It began actually 10 years later with a Constitution for the United States of America. And just learn that and digest it and deal with it. Now, to understand how we got from there to where we are today, step by step, in depth, that's 100 and some pages, maybe a couple hundred pages. And it's called The Greatest Story Never Told. And that's the second PDF at this website. If you don't do anything in the next couple of weeks, do this. Pull them down, print them, and read them. And you'll understand what we're fighting to get back to. And basically, it's just people understanding there are two jurisdictions of land and there are two jurisdictions of citizenry. And that's what I had to say. Thank you so much. Andre, thank you so much. We'll go next to Michael in Las Wages, Nevada, and then Jennifer Sue in Middleton, New York. Michael, you there?
Good evening. Can you hear me pretty good?
I hear you very well. Thank you. I'm muting out.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being on, and thank you, John, Andre, Guy. Anyway, my thoughts were just listening to everyone, but the first one is the Mayflower. How did the Mayflower get over here? Did they just get on a ship and sail across, or was it a contract? Did they come for free, or did they pay? My next one is 1938. Judges agreed to be taxed. Before that, they were never taxed, so they had no skin in the game, so to say. They were neutral in the courtroom. They're not neutral anymore because they're one-sided. And my third one is my grandson got himself in a little pickle, and I was on the road or fixing to go on the road to go to work, so I called the public defender's office, who was going to represent or whatever they do. I don't know. Don't care. And I called the bonding office in the county, in Madison County. I called the courthouse to ask for the bonding office. They gave me the address, telephone number, and I called, confirmed it. And then I talked to the public defender, and we had about a 20-minute conversation. And I ended it with, well, I hope the county has enough insurance because you're a corporation, and I've got your bond number. And it all went away. I went to work,
and I
got a phone call. Well, they sent the check back, the bond money back. They cut a check and sent the bond money back. So it all went away.
It's interesting how much of it all revolves around a nickel or a dime, doesn't it?
Yep. The corruption started a long time ago with the King James Version. It's trademarked. King James Version of the Bible. And the reason he did that was because before that, they had the Hebrew version, and the Hebrew version said, well, men were corrupt. That meant kings, queens, everybody was corrupt. Governments were corrupt. Can't have the preachers telling people that the king is corrupt, can we? Or the king is naked.
But, imagine that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I text and called a lot of people to see if they'd be on the call tonight so that they could get some information. The information's out there. You just have to go dig it up.
Thank you very much for being on the call tonight.
No, thank you, John. You guys are great.
We're co-laborers beside you, passing through pilgrims in an unholy land, just trying to do the best we can with what the Most High King has graced us with.
Okay. Let me leave an 800 number. There's many new people on the call tonight, first-time callers. Now, you that have been here and have dealt with me, you all have my direct cell phone number, and I will supply that privately to those people that I'm about to give an 800 number to. So grab your pen and paper, and then after we give this, I've got one more bit of housekeeping, and Jennifer will be our next questionnaire here. So the phone number is 1-800-625-4250. 625-4250. 1-800-625-4250. And you call that number. It goes directly into a voicemail. It doesn't ring to me. I don't answer that. It goes to a voicemail and then comes to me as an email. And from that email, I can determine if it's
spam or real.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. All right. So it's 1-800-625-4250. And next is Sister Jennifer Sue. How do you do?
Fine, Michael. Good, thanks. Hi, John.
Hey. Hey, young lady. How are you?
Good, thanks. I just don't think one question has been asked that I would like to know the answer to tonight, and that is, let's just say Merchant has an oath of office that he's done, but it's the oath of office to the corporation, not the proper wording to the original Constitution of the United States of America. Is that still no good on his part?
That's a good question, and I'm glad you asked that. Now, what state is he a judge in? Did anybody remember? Oh, that's right. It was New York. New York. Oh, gosh, golly gee willikers. New York has some unbelievably stringent statutes regarding the oath of office and how that's to be filed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They have a very specific they've written it out, and the only thing that you can add into that or change is which office. It says, and I will faithfully discharge the duties of the office of, and then it leaves that blank. And that's the only thing that can be out of place in a judicial oath of office in the state of New York. So your point is very strong. If he wrote something out that he didn't copy it from what the state of New York applies, the state of New York he could be in hot water with. The federal government does not prescribe specifically the wording, but there are individuals in the state of New York, including a county commissioner that I was told about that 2 years ago she was allowed to leave to pursue other job opportunities because she wrote out the oath of office, turned it in, and what happened was is that the office of the New York Department of State contacted her and said, this is wrong. She told him, you can't be wrong. They said, thank you for your time. The next thing she had was a mayor invited her into her office, and she was allowed to leave. And so New York, some of the New Yorkers are very proud of the way they handle that. To date, we have not been able to find anybody that can verify that he does have a current valid oath of office. And your request that you made for our other bench, what happens is that for Judge Schick, that FOIL and the Freedom of Information Act law there, that's the same form that another individual, another caller this evening was talking about. So, just fill out another one of those forms for Judge Meacham just to add another, prong to your tenador.
Should I go to the FBI because there's fraud before I get the answers on?
Wait till you, until Judge Merchant tell you're positive that, and you have all the evidences that he does not have an oath of office, then go to the FBI. And for all of you, the rest of you listening to this call, this, I'm not going to call her a little old lady because, I actually know how old she is, and that might have been a signpost, a few mile markers in my rearview mirror for me, so I don't dare use little old lady. And at the time, this is a humble, single woman who's been a dutiful, honorable servant of the Most High King that was honorably widowed, that she is fighting the fight with the dragon, sword in hand. And so those of you who think, well, I may not be able to do this. Jennifer Sue is a killer dragon slayer. You know, so take heart, you know, from Jennifer Sue. She is $1 million, you know. So, and she is one that is, has, and is doing battle with the big dragons. Thank you, Jennifer.
But I just want to say, just because New York State has a written oath of office, it's obviously been written by the incorporated United States, not those who believe in the constitutional republic. And so going to the very top, isn't that still not what we want?
They're good point. There, the oath that New York has will stand the federal, no problem. I'll just tell you that right now. The only thing is that the New York folks do not like anybody twisting their words. They want it handled exactly the way that they've written it.
But also, that is United States, not United States of America.
Yeah, and it says Constitution of, and I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of New York. And you notice the United States and the State of New York are all upper and lower case. It's not the
right.
Corporate.
Oh, okay.
Now, you know, and there, I had a judge make a ruling in a summary ruling in a case. It was on an objection, and it was here in Houston. I was there actually for a case of my own at the time, and I heard the judge make the summary ruling, and I was in a wheelchair. I was inside the bar, And she looked at me funny. She says, "Do you have a question, young man?" And I'm probably 10 or 15 years older than she was. And I says, "That almost sounds like you're indicating that there is a difference between the aggregate and a corporation, and that there are two sets of classes of people here and two laws. Is that what you're saying?" And I asked her that. And this courtroom had about 230 people in it, of which over 200 of them were black. And she didn't dare answer that wrong in front of all of those other black people. And she's, "Oh, no, 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 there's," I says, "so this is a constitutional court under common law." And we, and she goes, "Well, I says, this is not admiralty law and this is not corporate law, correct?" And she goes, "No, no, no, it's constitutional law under, yeah." And actually, I was on my way out. She had just taken care of my case, and I'd created some havoc when she created my case. And we ended up parting famous friends. But I shouldn't have been so unkind to her. But I raised the question, and she very quickly, when I just asked the question, she answered and corrected the status of her court right there.
Yeah, and John, remember, the United States, constitutionally speaking, is a servant to the several states, constitutionally speaking, and that oath of office is still operating through the servant and not...
You're subordinate to both of them.
Correct.
Yep. Bingo, you the man. You the man.
One of these days I'll graduate and become an information provider.
Oh, shucks, Ma. Don't confuse us with the facts, lady, please. Yeah.
Anything else, Ms. Jennifer?
Nope, that's it. Thank you.
All righty. One last bit of housekeeping, if I may please, ladies and gentlemen. A straggler came in a little while ago, a couple of them, actually. And Beverly Hills, California. Nope, not this wrong one. Geneva, Illinois. I beg your pardon. Geneva, Illinois. Phone number ending in 5739. Would you be so kind as to share your first name, please? Just your first name only. It's for my record here. Geneva, Illinois. First name only. Ending in 5739. Pretty please.
Mark.
Mark, thank you very, very much, Mark. I appreciate you. Hope you enjoyed the call tonight and what you got of it. Next is, good. Again, if you were not here when I gave out the phone number before, it's 1-800-625-4250. I'll give it out one more time before we leave. And then the last to do my housekeeping with is from Frederick, Maryland, ending in 1059. Would you share your first name, please? Just your first.
Yes, Tony. I switched to my cell phone.
Tommy.
T-O-N-Y.
You're not allowed to do that, Tommy. You can't switch phones, Tommy. Makes me upset.
Sorry.
I'm just playing with you. All right. So thank you all for joining us this evening. Every night on the phone number and PIN number that you called in on, every night at 9 o'clock Eastern, we have conference calls. Last night, Monday night, was about correcting your political citizenship status. You heard me say earlier, and we talked earlier about the fact that there are two classes of citizens. Well, you're going to hear more about just that on the Monday night calls and what you can do about it. So you can go from having civil privileges, which they call civil rights, but it's really civil privileges. If something can be given to you and then taken away, it's given to you when you fill out an application and you petition them for the, how about a concealed weapons permit or whatever it is. That's a privilege, and they can take it away because you became a felon. That's a privilege. You got civil rights, which are privileges, actually, and you have constitutional rights, which are from the Almighty One, that cannot ever be taken from you. Okay? So That's Monday night. Tonight, of course, is Everything with John about litigation and how the tools to use to make things work. Tomorrow night, we'll be joined by Mr. Slevin. Mr. Slevin offers a limited liability company, so you can do commerce without having to report what you're doing and having to pay taxes. And what we do is we take the limited liability company. It is managed by two charitable religious trusts, which you happen to be the trustee to. So join us tomorrow night to learn how that works. Thursday night is a montage of either credit card, how to deal with credit card issues, litigation, more on the IRS regarding Internal Revenue Service and delivering, dealing with them, and home foreclosures. We deal with one of those three alternating every Thursday night. Friday night is a different call, a different pin. It's scripture study. If you'd like to join us for that scripture study, please just call my 800 number. If you have my cell number, call that directly. I'll give the 800 number again, 800-625-4250. And then on Saturday, we have the Ultimate in Asset Protection. It's .com, Justice Bernie Beshear. Justice Bernie Beshear is an ecclesiastical judge. In fact, he's the high judge for that court. So learn how ecclesiastical law can assist you in separating anything that's private with everything that's commercial, and then how to separate from the civil law into ecclesiastical law. It's a great call. You need to be on that call as well. So that's what we're doing. Thank you for joining us this evening. John, Brother John, thank you so very much. I think tonight was one of the best calls that you've done. And I want to thank Andre for showing up tonight and for sharing with us. He's a gem, I can tell. So until then, till tomorrow night, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you.